Tuesday to the last case of the still morning. Abdez Ahmed versus John Eric Ashcroft.
May it please the court. My name is Ronald Ng and I represent the petitioner, Mr. Hafez Ahmed. The petitioner is a national of the country of Pakistan whose application for asylum was denied by the immigration judge. He seeks review of the Board of Immigration Appeals order affirming that decision. I would like to begin with a brief discussion of the most important facts of this case and the basis for Mr. Ahmed's asylum claim. The petitioner's fear of persecution is based on a horrific incident occurring in May 1992, in which he and his cousin were abducted and tortured by members of the Mohajir Kwami movement, commonly referred to as the MQM. The MQM is documented by the U.S. Department of State and other reliable sources to be an extremely violent organization based primarily in the province of Sindh that is still actively engaged in political violence in Pakistan today. Mr. Ahmed's brother was also abducted and tortured by the same organization in January 1992.
Now, is it your theory that the Musharraf regime now in power is, at the very least, refusing to give protection to those who are targeted by MQM?
Yes, that's one aspect of Mr. Ahmed's present fear of returning to Pakistan. He fears that with his government, the Pakistani People's Party government of former Prime Minister Bhutto, no longer in power, he will no longer be able to turn to members of the government for protection from the MQM or other organizations interested in harming him.
There's evidence that people who have been targeted by MQM are in fact now still being ill-treated in various ways, being detained.
Yes, Your Honor. I would like to first answer your question by pointing out that MQM continues to be active.
Okay.
We can infer reasonably from that persons previously targeted by the MQM could again become targets of the MQM. The other part of the answer is that these individuals like Mr. Ahmed, who have a close relationship to the former prime minister and also her husband, Asif Zardari, these individuals are not only at risk from the MQM, but there's evidence in the country condition report that these individuals may also be subjected to arrest, harassment, or other harm by the current military government. And that was a primary focus of the hearing. The immigration judge, because Mr. Ahmed's hearing took place about a year and a half after the military government took over, the issue of his well-founded fear it was directed toward what fear he had from the present government. Continuing with the discussion of the facts, Mr. Ahmed was brutally tortured and stabbed in the abdomen and in the leg. He believes that he would have died from the loss of blood or been killed by members of the MQM had he not been able to escape. Statements made by his abductors, and I've already touched on this issue, statements made by his abductors as they were torturing him clearly indicated that she and his relatives were being targeted specifically because they were supporters of the MQ, of the Pakistani People's Party, and also because of their close personal relationship to the former Prime Minister and her husband.
Could I ask you this question? Is it your principal argument that the difference between whether these events occurred in 1992, as Mr. Ahmed testified, or in 1996 is fundamentally immaterial, or is it your primary position that the record is so clear that it was just a misstatement on the form that the immigration judge simply was out of bounds in concluding, in drawing any negative inferences from the mention of 1996 in the form?
Our position is, is both. That the...
If you had to pick, which one is your first position?
We would argue, since it's impossible to establish from the record itself conclusively that this was a typographical error, our position would be the first position, that whether these events occurred in 1992, as he testified, or in 1996, as his written statement incorrectly indicates, due to what appears to be a typographic error, it doesn't affect what happened to him in 1992 or 1996.
Okay,
as
but
the
of course,
for
if,
his
it
departure.
Were, if it had happened in 1996, contrary to all the rest of the evidence, you would also have to show that it happened at the time that Benazir Bhutto's government had already functionally lost control of the country, because the principal part of your argument is things were fine for him from 93 to 96 when she was back in power.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that the testimony provided by Mr. Ahmed and the documentary evidence does corroborate that conditions were deteriorating at the time that he left Pakistan. He had learned through leading members of the party that the Bhutto government was about to be dissolved. This, in fact, happened in November. And also, and I believe that this is the critical event, the immediate cause that Mr. Ahmed left Pakistan on September 24th, 1996. On September 20th, four days before his departure, former Prime Minister Bhutto's brother, Mir Murtaza Bhutto, and seven of his supporters were killed in an encounter with police in Karachi, which members of the Pakistani People's Party believed to have been politically motivated killings. And Prime Minister Bhutto's article, which appears in the record, her account of her brother's death in the administrative record on page 307, I believe, shares that view, that the killing of her brother was motivated for political reasons by their enemies. I realize that I'm entering...
You want to reserve the rest of the time for your rebuttal?
Yes.
Okay, fine.
Thank you.
Mr. Lawrence?
May it please the Court. My name is Victor Lawrence, and I represent the Attorney General. This Court should deny this petition for review for three reasons. First, substantial evidence supports the Board's conclusion that this petitioner exaggerated and inaccurately portrayed his one-incident claim of past persecution that occurred 4 years prior to leaving Pakistan.
But why is it so clear? I mean, what is this evidence if one looks at this and takes into account, which the immigration judge did not, the change in political regime during that four-year period? I mean, how do we know that the immigration judge even understood the difference between the Pakistani People's Party and the regime that took power after, well, the regime that was in power from 1990 to 92 or three, and then it took power again in 96.
Right. Recall, Your Honor, that it wasn't the entire time between the alleged incident of persecution in 1992 and 1996 that the PPP was in power. There was a full year there.
There was a year in which the testimony indicates things were getting better, and then the Bhutto, Benazir Bhutto was reelected. And the problem is the immigration judge seems oblivious to all of this, to the notion that perhaps things are getting safer, and then at that point they're quite safe, and uses this as a way of saying that the torture incident didn't happen.
Well, first of all, Your Honor, recall that the immigration judge's opinion is not before this court for review. It's the board's opinion.
The board's opinion is even worse. The board's opinion is cursory, doesn't seem to acknowledge any of the subtleties of this situation. The board's opinion takes exactly, if you count the heading as a page, it's a page and a half. If you don't count the heading and start where it says per curiam, it's a page of writing. And all it says is the record supports the immigration judge's conclusion that the respondents support. So that takes us right back to the immigration judge.
With respect to the credibility issue and whether or not there was a material inconsistency between what he told the immigration judge.
Right, and how about we find that the immigration judge had good reason to find that the claims of the respondent and his brother are inaccurate and exaggerated. The only thing they mention at that point is this 1992 versus 1996, and then the statement at the top of the next page where it says, even if the respondent was detained in 92, we remained in Pakistan without incident until September 1996. Not a word about what was going on. Maybe they don't read newspapers. I don't know. But no engagement in the argument and the issue. And then the reference to the sisters, which the petitioner pointed out are politically insignificant in Islamic culture.
Well,
I mean, there's just nothing. This is so little to go on.
Well, I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. I think what the board has shown here is there are specific and cogent reasons for finding that this petitioner's credibility is suspect and therefore did not credibly satisfy the burden of proof for his claim.
What are these specific? I'm sitting here staring at this thing. I've read it like 20 times because it's so short. It doesn't take that long to do. I don't see anything either specific or cogent when we don't have any information about the 92 to 96 period. We don't have any information about the sisters. We don't have any engagement in the fact that he's not saying that it's his party membership alone. It's the familial relationship with the Bhutto and Zardari families, which in that culture is probably at least as important. So he's a subset of this. Then kind of an irrelevant comment about the family hasn't been accused of corruption, an inaccurate comment about none of his immediate family members holding elective office. What?
The specific and cogent reason is that there is a huge material inconsistency with the idea that this petitioner came into the asylum officer and said that he was persecuted in 1996 and that's what caused him to flee Pakistan. Then he changes his testimony entirely, blaming it on a typographical error. When if you read, which I'm sure you did, I'm not suggesting that, but if you read the statement at page 589 through 591 of the record, clearly leaves an indelible impression, and not a typo, the indelible impression that these events happened in 1996. So what the board is saying is that that there's a huge material inconsistency between what the petitioner presented at the time that he applied for asylum and what happened before the immigration judge. And as this court has ruled in several cases, when there's that type of inconsistency between what's presented to the asylum officer and what's presented to the immigration judge, that stands as substantial evidence to support an adverse credibility finding. And that's what this court has said most recently in the 4G
Right, and so it's fine if somebody's been tortured in 96 to send them back, but it's not fine if they were tortured in 92,
well,
is that it?
Well, what the board is saying, again, is that he was clearly exaggerating his claim to say that it happened in 1996 instead
well,
of
but,
1992.
But let me say, why is it an exaggeration if you get the date wrong? Is there that's one element
because
of the story. Another element is what happened.
The reason why it's an exaggeration is because it determines what motivated him to leave Pakistan. If he truly was persecuted in 1996, that stands to embellish his claim that that's what motivated him to leave Pakistan.
So now he's happy, though, at the hearing to give what you regard as the weaker claim, that it's 1992. At the hearing, he consistently says 1992, and so, I mean, perhaps in another world you'd be arguing waiver or something, but he presents as his principal reason something that you're postulating as a weak claim. He's not, in other words, changing his testimony at the hearing to something that would be stronger. In your view, he's ratcheting back at the hearing.
Right, and I hypothesize and perhaps...
You speculate. You have no evidence of this at all.
All right, then I'll retract that for purposes of this argument, but I would say, though, that is a large inconsistency between what he presented to the asylum officer and what he presented to the immigration judge, and that can support an adverse credibility finding. Regardless, though, we still say that he did not satisfy the burden of proof for asylum, even if these events all happened in 1992, and I concede he consistently said that throughout his immigration hearing. But as this court has held before in the Danden case, where it really looked at the standard of substantial evidence. Was there substantial evidence for the immigration judge to conclude that, or in this case the board, to conclude that no reasonable adjudicator would be compelled to find to the contrary? And here, certainly the allegations are things that somebody might agree would be persecution, but not necessarily so. And the board looked at everything, looked at the fact that there was this clear embellishment between what happened in 1992 and 1996, and determined that all things considered, it felt that this did not rise to the level of persecution. And it cites, and you know, you mentioned the information with the sisters before. Well, you know, he claims that under Islamic culture, there's this idea that the sisters would not have been persecuted anyway. But he claims something different in his statement to the asylum officer and to the immigration judge. At page 589 of the record, he says, our close friendship with the Bhuttos has exposed members of my family to serious harm in the past and continues to place my life and the lives of my relatives in grave danger. Doesn't distinguish between brothers or sisters, he talked about all his relatives being in grave danger.
I hate to say it, but one possible reading of that is that women are so unimportant that you don't need to exclude them from such a statement. It's the same idea where when people think when you say men, it means everybody. But
I understand your point, but given the breadth of the statement to say that all his relatives would be in danger, I'd have to assume that...
I prefer your world. Don't get me wrong.
I understand.
I definitely do.
I understand. But but in any respect, getting past the issue of past persecution, which I think the board had shown substantial evidence or has shown specific and cogent reasons to support its belief that he did not credibly satisfy his burden to prove that, we would also say that substantial evidence supports the board's opinion that there was not an objective, reasonable fear of persecution in the future. This is somebody who lived in Pakistan, notwithstanding the administration change. He lived in Pakistan from 1992 to 1996, free of harm. During that time, he had the ability to become a medical doctor. There's nothing to suggest that, in reality, that if he went back to Pakistan, he has a reasonable fear of being persecuted in the future. But he had three opportunities before the asylum officer, the immigration judge, and the board, but nobody believed that he credibly satisfied his burden of proof. And under substantial evidence standard, we submit that this court should deny this petition.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Ng, do you have anything to add?
There is no evidence regarding what the petitioner may have stated to the asylum officer. That's not in the record. It's possible that in his interview with the asylum officer, he testified to a kidnapping and torture in 1992. In other words, he straightened out the error as he attempted unsuccessfully to do during his asylum hearing. On the issue of the petitioner's ability to remain in Pakistan from 1992 to 1996, his government, his party, the Pakistani People's Party, was only in power from October 1993 to November 1996. I believe that that's the point that the respondent is raising. How was he able to remain in Pakistan between May 1992 and October 1993? If he was kidnapped and tortured in May 1992. I believe that a cursory examination of the documentary evidence would also explain how he was able to remain during that period of approximately 1 year at the beginning of the period. In June 1992, about a month after the petitioner was abducted, the Pakistani military moved into the province and they began a large-scale operation which partially restored order in October 1993 his own party returned to power.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. That completes the arguments for today. This case will be taken under advisement. And the court will be in recess for a couple of weeks, as far as I know.